Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome, I'm Tara Diamond from AMA. I'm so glad you've been up to join us on Resource People Podcast today. And today I'm having a chat with Fiona Birkin, who's the CEO Australia and International Director of Strategy at Destiny Rescue. Fiona's really well known in the resources sector after spending more than two decades at Morris Corporation. And she tells us today why she made the switch to fight a global humanitarian cause and help save some of the world's most vulnerable children. I hope you enjoy the conversation. A content trigger warning. This podcast covers topics of child trafficking and child sexual exploitation that some listeners may find disturbing. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Fiona.
Oh, thank you, Tara. Thanks for the opportunity.
Fiona, I'd love to start the podcast with you giving us some background into your career, your time in the resources industry at Morris Corp, and why you've made the change to fight a global humanitarian cause.
Look, I guess I was in the sector for 22 years. I was with Morris Corporation. They're a facilities management organisation. We predominantly focused on providing services for FIFO in the resources and energy sector. I really loved the sector and all the travel that it afforded me to remote Australia and working just with the salt of earth people and also our involvement in Indigenous employment. I started as CEO and grew the business fairly quickly in 8 years. It was during the boom, but just to give you an example of the growth, we had approximately, I think, 70 employees when we started, and we ended up with over 2,000 employees during that time. And I mentioned about the Indigenous employment. FMG was one of our major clients at the time. And with FMG, we recorded 20% Indigenous employment year in, year out. So that was 8 years of exponential growth, really. And we didn't have any support from the bank. We had to grow on to retain profits. So at the end of that, I decided I wanted to have a bit of a break. And the board at Morris afforded me that break. I still remained with Morris. I still worked in an executive role in marketing. And it was one of the best things that I ever did for my career. It gave me a chance to rest and rejuvenate and reflect. You don't realise the reflection that is actually going on, even subconsciously. And it helped me think about what I was doing well, what I wasn't doing well. So when the board asked me to come back in during the time when the market dynamics were very challenging, and you know, our listeners are from this sector, will remember when it went from boom to bust almost in a lot of the different commodities, I was able to apply that back into the organisation. And again, we were really successful during that period. We had to change our pricing strategy to low cost because otherwise we just wouldn't win any work at all. But we did manage to grow our earnings margin during that time. And a lot of that was around our cultural transformation program initiative. We were trying to differentiate ourselves from the rest of the players in the market. And yes, we knew we did customer service very, very well. And we set about setting up a model of training in that customer service space. But the light bulb went on with me when I went to a conference in Melbourne and the speaker there sort of said, you better be into customer service if you're not into technology, otherwise you won't survive in the next 30 years as an organisation. Right. And the light bulb went on and I thought, well, we're doing that now, so I can just roll that out through our entire program, our cultural transformation program, and it worked. And that performance wasn't missed and we were acquired by a large multinational. So, yeah, that's my time in the resources and energy space for 22 years.
Wonderful. And yeah, and absolutely, highs and lows. And you just touched on the travel, but I'm sure it was incredibly intense managing the business and the workforce and bringing about the kind of change that you did there. Let's talk about why you've made a switch to work for and lead Destiny Rescue. Can you tell us about Destiny Rescue, what its mission is, and then really telling us about what attracted you to be their leader?
Sure. Yeah. Look, during the time that I was with Morris Corporation, it was constantly, I mean, the resources sector is really big in the corporate social responsibility space. Mm. And it was always on top of mind, especially with our Indigenous employment and engagement. So it was always there. And I was constantly thinking about my purpose. And I've got to admit that what happened was that the organisation that acquired us, I don't think it's any secret, it was Sodexo, a large global organisation that's in 80 countries and has 475,000 employees. They asked if I would like to go to a conference in Sydney. And off I went. It was the Global Women's Summit. And, you know, I'd been to many of these conferences, leadership conferences. But there was just something about this summit that I just couldn't put my finger on. It was just so powerful. And it took me a couple of days after I'd left to work it out. And what I realized is that every single woman, and they were powerful leaders from all around the world, presidents and prime ministers and, you know, very large organization leaders, they all got up, and small charities too, just the whole range, all got up and spoke about their vision, their mission, and it always ended up with, we make profits to do blah. So every single time they spoke, it was all about earning profits for a purpose. And that clicked. And when Sodexo sort of talked to me about going on to an international profit and loss role, I just said, no, look, I really want a social responsibility role. Mm. And they offered that to me. It did fall through at the last minute. And Destiny Rescue actually just fell in my lap immediately after that. I'm so glad that I was able to take on the role with Destiny Rescue, because it was far better suited to my experience, and I couldn't think of a better cause. You know, it was just a dream to become CEO of Destiny Rescue.
So what is Destiny Rescue's cause, and what does the organisation do?
Sure. Look, Tara, there's over 1 million children currently, as we speak right now, in modern sexual slavery. So Destiny's Rescue mission is to rescue the children from sexual exploitation and trafficking and help them stay free. Our vision is to eradicate this exploitation in our lifetime, and our 2030 vision is to rescue 100,000 children. We rescue in a number of countries, including Cambodia, Philippines, Thailand, Nepal, the Dominican Republic. We are in three fundraising countries, including Australia, the United States, and New Zealand. And we do a number of rescue types too. We do what we call covert rescues. We do raids and we do prevention. And there's been a dynamic transformation in Destiny Rescue just in the time that I've been with the organisation, which has only been 16 months, actually. So I've seen it. I was lucky enough to go to Thailand and Cambodia before I even sort of came into the office as an orientation, and before we sort of had to stop travelling. And first I went to Cambodia, and I went to one of our rescue homes, and it was a very joyful experience where I was able to experience the girls that we'd rescued. It was also a vocational training establishment. We had a full-on salon, beauty salon in that home where they could train to be hairdressers or train to do nail art or train to do makeup. And it was just a lovely introduction to the joyful side of the work that we do. However, I then moved to Thailand and went undercover actually as a rescue agent for a couple of evenings, and that was enough. And that was the more horrific side of what we do. at the very first establishment we went to, and when I talk about an establishment, I'm talking about a venue like a bar, for example, that is a front for a brothel, really.
Right.
Yeah. So at the first bar that we went to, we identified a child. I'm really pleased to say that 3 weeks later, law enforcement in Thailand, we worked with the law enforcement and we were able to raid that establishment, close that establishment down, and the perpetrators, like the management and the pimps, were arrested. And it was in a really famous street in one of the cities in Thailand. And that's quite unusual to have an establishment closed down. And it was closed down for about 9 months. So it sent a really, really strong message to the other venue owners.
That's incredible. And you've touched on a few different things that I just want to ask a few more questions about. You just touched on when you went to Cambodia, the education and the support, and then took us on the journey to Thailand where you got to experience Destiny Rescue. So can you explain to us how, and I've read a little bit that says that you don't just rescue, but you restore. So can you talk about how Destiny Rescue operates in tandem, those two elements?
Often we will have our own rescue homes. This is not our focus, though, Tara. For Destiny Rescue, our calling is to rescue children and we help them stay free. Right. So if we can work with other NGOs, we will. If they've got homes, it saves, you know, we drive synergies, it saves doubling up on costs, and we will put the children in their homes. But you do have to remember, the first and foremost, what we really do is to put the children back into the community, integrate them back into the community if we're able to do so safely. There's a lot of research that says, you know, they shouldn't be institutionalized, and for long-term sustainability, it is far better for them to be reintegrated. And often they can, if it's not with their parents, it might be with grandparents or siblings or someone else in the community. So as a last resort, we will put them into our rescue homes where we do give them vocational training or we get them back into school. There are some countries, however, for example, the Philippines and the Dominican Republic, where the government authorities take over the care of the survivors. And we don't, we therefore, you know, once the raid has been done, they go into these establishments owned by government.
Fiona, now that you've explained to us what OSEC is and the work that they're doing, could you tell us why the work of Destiny Rescue is so important in that ecosystem of people looking at this area? And perhaps give us an example of a success story to bring that to life.
Thank you, Tara. Yes, look. All children deserve our protection. As adults, it's our duty to protect them. I mean, can you imagine being raped up to 20 times a day? And you can think of how worse it is for a child, and what about a toddler, and if they even survive. So one specific case that actually sticks in my mind, because of the age of the victim and also the fact that we were actually asked to do our part in the undercover rescue here from Australia. But I can't talk any more about that. But in February, British intelligence intercepted child pornography and traced it back to the Philippines. And a joint task force was set up with the National Bureau of Investigation, which is the Philippines Federal Police Force, and Destiny Rescue to find and rescue this two-year-old toddler at the centre of the case. Our agents provided transactional evidence to make this case against the perpetrators. In this instance, it was the stepfather of the child who was offering to abuse him live on the internet for money, with the mother clearly seen in the background. So our undercover agents eventually, over a long period of time, it was about 3 months, gained the stepfather's trust, and it was a very complex rescue, but eventually the toddler was rescued. And the parents were arrested and they're still in jail waiting to be tried.
Well, thank you for sharing that example and really hitting home the absolutely amazing work that Destiny Rescue does
throughout the world, helping children to be protected from really horrible, horrible things that happen. You've been doing this incredible work.
We've actually been doing it since 2001, but it was a bit of a scattergun approach to start with as we evolved, I suppose. And we really didn't start keeping statistics to about 2011. So we've rescued over 5,500 individuals since 2011 when we started to keep those statistics. But that is going to ramp up quite dramatically because, as I mentioned, you know, we were focusing on the covert rescue where you would just go into a bar, you would identify a child, you would normally have to go back many times to gain their trust, and then you would take them out individually with little impact on the establishment, really. But through these raids where they are getting closed down and, you know, justice prevails, really, and it's become a huge deterrent. And we're able to rescue so many more at once. We've rescued in one raid on its own 32 individuals.
That's amazing. I guess what you just gave us was a bit of a snapshot into the very large task that your vision is by 2030 for 100,000 rescues. So that background certainly puts that into scale.
Yes.
Cynically, some people might be listening saying, well, so you've done the raid and there's 32 children that are saved and it's absolutely incredible. But what do you say to people that say, but those people will just find another way to do that, to exploit children and to do these horrible things? How does Destiny Rescue work with those local law enforcement and those local NGOs to really make sure that it's not just a band-aid?
Yeah. Look, I really believe now that we are working with law enforcement agents in a lot of countries with very close relationships, it becomes a huge deterrent for perpetrators. Mm-hmm. When justice prevails, it is a deterrent. But also, we've rescued these children and, you know, they get back into their community. We have social workers that go back to the community and ensure that they are not going back into the sexual trade. We only have, I think, 9% we are unable to flag where they go. We've lost contact with them, and only 6% we do know regress back into that trade. So the rest of them are, you know, getting back into the community, back into school, back into a vocation, and there's so many, many fantastic stories of the girls going on to, you know, have good careers, et cetera.
Is it largely young females, Fiona? You gave us some statistics there. Do you have a sense of the difference in, you know, gender and what's happening in this space?
Oh, yes, by far it's the vast majority is girls, yes. Very, very small percentage of boys, but it does exist.
Right. You did just give us an incredible outcome that only, you know, regrettably, but a very small portion of the people that Destiny Rescue rescues actually do go back into this kind of work or indentured work, I'd imagine, in some circumstances. So there's this amazing, you know, over 90% of wonderful success stories, although, you know, I'm sure there's an incredible amount of trauma these children then have to deal with. Can you give us a sense of some of the stories or some of the things that really make people that support Destiny Rescue and who do the work, really it keeps them going? What are some of the success stories?
Oh, look, Tara, there's billions of them. Just off the top of my head, I hadn't mentioned, but we do work in prevention. And so, look, a good example of this is we have female agents on the Nepali-Indian border. We have border stations there, and they're sort of trained to identify trafficking, and they intercept children that they know have been tricked and are going across the border. Because they lose countless kids that have been smuggled over the border, disappearing into the countries. And they're trapped with no papers or money, and obviously they suffer from, you know, terrible forms of abuse and exploitation. So our agents are astute. They're trained to identify this. And just last week, we rescued 17 trafficked people along that particular border. One was an 8-year-old and one was 11-year-old.
We're currently
actually looking to fund 7 more stations along that Nepal-Indian border to block more gaps where the children are being trafficked.
That's obviously the main part of a charity, and I imagine a huge part of your time as the leader for the organisation is really thinking and devising strategies to fundraise to be able to fund these important roles. How did your experience in the resources industry prepare you for this type of role?
As you mentioned, Australia is a fundraising nation. So I think elements of good leadership are still the same no matter where you go. It's, to me, first and foremost, the focus is on the culture and getting the right people in the organisation. Having the right culture leads to a huge amount of joy, and it's just such a pleasure to be able to work day in, day out with the right people and the right culture from that. And that's what I have done here at Destiny Rescue. We've got the most marvellous team. From that, you develop a plan. I used to say, if anyone asked me what's the secret to leadership, it's focus, focus, focus. And it still is, obviously, but as long as you've got your culture and the right people in the first place. So you focus on your plan, and you certainly make that vision and mission, and we call it our mantra. We have a mantra in the organisation, which is a bit novel, I suppose. A lot of people have values, very similar thing. You make sure that they're the most foremost in your plan, and then, you know, with the right culture, people and plan, you can be assured of results, and I can say that 100% hand on heart. But you do have to be ready to pivot, like we did in COVID, and we did have great results too.
Well, I'd like to ask you a bit about that, actually, because the international travel, the borders have been closed, no restaurants, no bars. How has the work of Destiny Rescue changed over the pandemic?
Sure. I talked a bit about my experience in Thailand. A lot of those venues now have closed down because of the COVID restrictions and obviously the travel restrictions as well, because a lot of them are touristy areas. So a lot of the lucky girls got to go home, actually. If it was safe, they got to go home. Others, it was driven underground, and it certainly has been driven online. Like, some of the families are dependent on the income, so they're finding other ways to sell the services of their children. And online is really easily accessible. And suddenly there's even larger, more attentive international audiences with actually an increased number of pedophiles to sell to. So,
oh, that's just so shocking, but I guess that's the logical step. How has Destiny Rescued changed from being a very hands-on rescue, physical rescue organisation to support and to deter and to support and rescue children that are being exploited online?
So it's not easy. We are in the Philippines, as I've mentioned, and that's the known hotspot for OSEC, to cut online sexual exploitation of children short. It's called OSEC.
Okay.
And in the Philippines, there's a lot of enabling factors, particularly because they speak English well. They've got cheap internet access. There's ease in money transfers, and it's a historic commercial sex industry in that country. So we are, you know, having to form relationships really with other organisations. And I've recently become part of the advisory committee for Westpac on their Safer Children, Safer Communities board. We work with other NGOs that are in the Philippines. I've been into the ACE establishment in the Valley, where it's just been built. It's the Australian Federal Police, and the acronym stands for, and I'm always a little bit, get a bit tongue-tied with this one. I think it's the Australian Centre to Counter exploitation of children. We've met with the superintendent there and, just forming these relationships to all attack the issue together, because it's so difficult to detect. And once you start trolling around on the internet and looking, you know, from our perspective, trying to detect this to rescue children, you can be breaking a whole lot of laws.
Okay. So instead of, I guess, going out and scouting venues, you've got people who are online looking for activity to understand where this is originating from. Is that correct?
We are working with certain cybersecurity organisations to be able to do that. We are getting trained in that, but currently not so specific. A lot of what happens occurs on social media, actually, social media like Facebook. So, yeah, it's quite easy to access that, I suppose. So, yeah, in the countries that we're not able to rescue in the physical sense of, you know, physical establishments being open, we're more focused in that area, yeah.
Wow. And Fiona, with the, you know, incredible work, I imagine that it also can take its toll. And with COVID in particular, resource and energy employers have spent a lot of time, you know, understanding and then, you know, providing support to people, you know, as we've been going through the pandemic. But it strikes me that this is something, you know, supporting the mental health of your people must be always front of mind in an organisations like yours. So as the CEO of Australia, but, you know, leading Destiny Rescue internationally on strategy, are you able to give us some insights into how Destiny Rescue supports the mental health and wellness of its people?
Sure. We are a faith-based organisation, so we do have a pastoral care department where anyone can tap into at any time. But I do find from the rescue agents, they say that the debrief after a rescue between themselves is the most valuable form to help them with, you know, the challenges and the atrocities that they see. I myself, you know, I don't see it, but I hear it on a regular basis, and I meditate daily, and I've just learnt, you know, through the meditation, you allow yourself to feel those feelings and emotions, and then you just flick it off as you would in a meditation, and that works very well for me. But we do have all the traditional forms like EAPs, et cetera, here in Australia, and in different countries they have different types of, you know, coping mechanisms, I suppose.
Yeah, available. Wow. And with the connection I just made to mental health within the resources industry, but also we touched on that Australia is a giving and a charity country. So one of the big things I wanted to talk to you about today, Fiona, was a concept called workplace giving. Some people who are listening may have heard it before and it might be new to others. So can you tell us what workplace giving is?
Sure. So workplace giving is a joint relationship between employers, employees and charities. Employees make a small contribution of their pre-tax dollar and see the tax benefits immediately. And employers will often match their giving dollar for dollar.
Great. Is this a big thing in Australia, or is other countries in the world leading in this space?
To be honest, Tara, I can't answer you about other countries in the world, but I certainly know that it's not a big thing in Australia at the moment. Oh, it should be. There's probably less than 300,000 employees at the moment contributing out of a workplace of potentially 15 million.
Feel as an Australian that when things happen like the bushfires, Australians are so generous, yet they're doing it post-tax from what, you know, what you're explaining.
Yes, yes, I agree.
Wow.
Look, you know, there's so many benefits around workplace giving, and one of them is that we're actually targeting the working Australian. And, yeah, it, like you said, it is, the tax benefits are realised immediately.
And we all know and watch ads on TV where companies use kind of social responsibility or their partnerships with organizations they're supporting as a really important kind of brand element of what they're doing. So do you see workplace giving as a trend or a moving trend around social responsibility?
Look, I'm really hoping so. As I said, this is my individual passion and purpose. I really want to inspire employers and employees' purpose through workplace giving. I think it's going to be of strategic significance for corporates in the next few years following COVID. I really think that COVID highlights the need for purpose, community, and social responsibility. It's highlighted that. But I also genuinely believe there's a competitive advantage in corporate philanthropy. Many corporates are developing a conscience and as a result are increasing their value in not only philanthropy but in their own organisations.
Wow. So, you know, are there any things that people could look up and research in terms of workplace giving? How do they find out about it? How do they figure out if it's something that would suit their organisation?
Yeah, well, certainly they can contact Destiny Rescue directly through their website on the contact tab. And we have that whole process mapped out, including, you know, setting up payroll, which is sometimes what seems to put people off, but it shouldn't because it's very, very easy. Okay. But look, alternatively, if they want to go direct to an impartial party, then they can go to Workplace Giving Australia, who is a not-for-profit, but it's also set up specifically to assist corporates in setting up workplace giving. So that's Workplace Giving Australia. You can look it up on the web.
That's great news that there's an organisation set up to support people, organisations specifically, and hopefully people that are listening today will take up the challenge to think about what they're doing as an organisation in terms of that space. But back to Destiny Rescue, we've hopefully raised awareness of your organisation and the incredible work that you do. How do they get in touch? You just touched on a couple of things, but what can people do and how can they help?
Well, for us, it is all about workplace giving. And I was going to mention earlier on where we're talking about, you know, how successful we've been with our donors when we pivoted under COVID. Wonderful donors. We're being able to contribute to our rescue nations 300% above what we did last year, which is just fantastic. But unfortunately, our donors, I suppose with the economy the way it is, they're more concerned about committing to regular giving, which is obviously helps us with our long-term sustainability and planning. This is why workplace giving is so, you know, so many benefits for all the players, you know, for the employer. It reduces turnover and it increases engagement and interaction for employees. It helps drive positive culture, which I talked about before. And it's also a low-cost way to give high impact and invest in the community. But for the employee, it provides higher job satisfaction. It results in higher productivity and longer tenure. Employees feel proud of their employer and it gives them a greater purpose at work. And we've talked about the effective giving. But for the charity, it provides a sustainable regular financial support and allows us to move away from forms of fundraising that the public don't like shopping centre stands or cold calling. And look, I do have a case study, JB Hi-Fi, one of the pioneer companies that initiated workplace giving over 10 years ago, that had raised up to, I think, $17 million. That was only up to 2018. I'm not sure where they're at now with their charity partners. But the CEO, Richard Murray, who I actually have met and talked about workplace giving with, and he's a very passionate advocate of workplace giving, his team undertook a project to identify the contribution that workplace giving makes to the company beyond the cultural value. They found an incredible $8 million per year saving on recruitment and training because of the increased employee engagement and retention. So
that's incredible.
Yeah. So look, for us and for me, it's about workplace giving. Again, like I just said, going to our website, the contact tab. We also do have a facility. If you prefer, you can text the word rescue to 04 8 8 0845 1874.
Maybe so, repeat that one again.
Yes, it's just text the word rescue to 0488 851 874, and it'll just give you prompts. I just think you put in your name and then we can come back to you, or just go onto the website www.destinyrescue.org.
And I also found your stories on your Facebook were incredibly inspiring, because that's where you're getting more of a week by week, day by day insight into your work. So I'd encourage people, it really inspired me going to visit your Facebook page and hearing all the different work around the globe. So Fiona, I really cannot thank you enough for sharing your experiences, your purpose and your passion, making us aware of the work of Destiny Rescue, and then also really raising workplace giving as something that companies should really be thinking about in terms of their own strategy and what is going to be leading them forward post the pandemic. So Fiona, thank you so much for spending your time and joining us on Resource People Podcast.
Thanks, Tara. Look, I've been indirectly, since I started with Destiny Rescue, involved in, and I counted every day, 1,118 rescues. I'm determined to continue creating awareness around the issue of sexual exploitation and trafficking and protecting the kids. So, yeah, if anyone has a heart for these kids, then please join us through workplace giving. And I suppose in those famous words, once you know, you can't unknow.
That's right. Well, thank you again for sharing that. And let's hope that by spending the time together with the podcast, we'll be able to help increase that count, because people will be able to give through workplace giving or directly towards Destiny Rescue to help the amazing work you do. Thanks, Fiona.
Thanks, Tara.
So wonderful to have that conversation with Fiona and really share with you Destiny Rescue and their amazing work. Something here at AMA we're so pleased to be able to share with you, and so interesting to hear about how employees and employers can join the fight and help Destiny Rescue through workplace giving. Thanks so much for joining us on Resource People Podcast. I'm Tara Diamond.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People Podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.